This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Underrated tune. Love this track. Just three hombres on a Monday afternoon here on Overdrive.
Three hombres.
And there he is, Muchacho, the old dog, Jeff O'Neill, my guy, New Wing, who dis, and yeah. Jamie Noodles McLennan.
All you need is those wing. Shakers. Those, what are they called?
What are they, maracas?
Maracas, yes. Yep. You need maracas and a hat. You're good.
I love it. I love a lot of people bringing up El Guapo from the Three Amigos. There's a little bit of that vibe when he gets his new sweater. Right? He likes his new sweater.
That's right.
And I could see that because, listen, the O-Dog is grinding, man. He was under the knife just a few days ago.
What's the guy's name? El Guapo?
El Guapo. Tell us you will die like dogs. You will die like dogs. No, we won't. That show is a very, very underrated.
Outstanding movie. And just like a great cast. Chevy Chase, Martin Short, Steve Martin. Yeah. They are, the Three Amigos.
Yeah. Anyway, the wing is what it is. It's more of just a pain right now. It's not literally a pain. It's just comfort level, getting around, doing stuff day by day.
Do you think you'll be swinging them in a couple of months or what? Do you feel like you're moving in the right direction to get the golf clubs out or what?
Dude, this surgery was for the quality of my life. I mean, people talk about pro athletes and the life you live. It's the best life you'll ever live. But I'm telling you, there is a price to pay sometimes. Like, they don't just hand it to you. They take out little chunks here and there, and this is a part of it. The third one on the other shoulder. But the only reason I'm doing it is for quality of life and to be able to play golf. Contrary to your ridiculous text that you sent me, saying I'm going to lose 20 yards and I'll have a slice. But that's the goal. So we'll see.
Well, between you and Ray, you're putting together a whole new body here. You got Ray's got a new knee, you got the new shoulder, and everything's coming together for the two of you. So Ray will join us here in just a moment. And the Leafs are in action tonight. The Raptors are in action tonight. And there's a bunch of games throughout the NHL, and that's going to be the case anyways, but it is Martin Luther King Day down in the States, and that's obviously a big holiday and a big sports day historically. And there's a lot of NBA games, a lot of NHL games, and we'll get into a number of things on that front. Marcellus Wiley later in the hour. Sam Mitchell in about an hour on the Raptors game tonight. But the Leafs, Jets, and I think we touched on something in the last hour that we can expand on here with Ray, because he can take us into the Vancouver market. You know, living in Vancouver, being from Vancouver, just the heightened anxiety this season is going to have because it's all Canadian all the time and it's a shortened season anyway.
Think and every about team, playing Calgary, and your old goalie gets a shutout and was dominant, and you're a Vancouver fan. You got to be looking at that, saying, "Why the hell didn't we sign him?" Why, you know, that chatter's going on in Vancouver. Half their old team from last year is on Calgary,
and Tanev was blocking shots left and right. Like, that's the thing.
Levo's playing on the top line with Monahan and Gaudreau. It's like, if you're a Van fan, you're like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, almost hit somebody in the stands the other night, but
he's getting his opportunities. Yeah. That's all that matters.
But point being is, you know what, though? It can change in a heartbeat. And you know, I thought Braden Holtby looked really good against Edmonton the first night. Even Demko was fantastic against the Oilers the second night. It's just Edmonton, their big boy, showed up in that second night. Like, Demko was – that game could have been really, really ugly. But it's just, you know, when you're looking at it, I think Vancouver, they lost the most on paper for me. That's why I had them farther down. I had them not making the playoffs. I have to have full disclosure because there's a chance they'll make the playoffs. JT Miller's playing tonight. That's a big boost. He was a fan. He was their best player.
I thought he was out for 2 weeks. That was my understanding based on the reporting. But I saw that today. I'm like, wow, that's big.
Yeah.
And
it's good
timing. They're only a few games in, but it's the connection between markets. Where another thing, like you guys mentioned, when you go down to the States, you know, you go through California, you hit Arizona, St. Louis on the way back, come home. Your media is covering it, but you don't care about what the opposing media is saying, what they think, if they even exist.
Dude, sometimes they don't. When I played in Carolina, the visiting media wouldn't even come and check us out.
Right. Exactly.
And even now, if you're in a big market, like the beat writer for LA doesn't necessarily want to Hey, I want my I want my readers to read up on Austin Matthews.
Doesn't care.
Don't care.
Historically didn't care. You cater to your own market.
Right.
But if you're in Toronto, it's like, I don't know what they're talking about in New York or Chicago. I don't care. But up here, I know what they're talking about in Montreal. I know what they're talking about in Vancouver and Edmonton. And they definitely know what we're talking about in Toronto. So yep. it's made a small division feel even smaller. It's like,
agreed.
You know, we're all in like on the same block.
Hayes, remember you talked about it last year, and L.A. was legendary at it. They went through their Canadian media tour. L.A. would come to Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and the whole time they'd be parading about Drew Doughty, and he's the Norris Trophy winner. Well, that's just the microcosm of what it is every single night with every team. You're just going to a different city, complaining about what's wrong and talking up the good stuff.
Yeah. Well, and hearing about it.
Exactly, but go a step further. You're paying attention to what's going on in Vancouver because it can directly affect, you know, what the Leafs are going through in Montreal, like if somebody's out or whatever, because you're battling for them.
That all ties it together, but again, that just wouldn't apply anywhere else. Like
exactly. That's
what makes the Canadian market so different. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. Ray, we were just kind of laughing about this, and listen, we can be leading the charge on this too, being irrational and emotional and yelling and screaming, but we're 5 days into the season, and I'm not sure the country's going to hold up. Like, they're freaking in Edmonton, they're freaking in Vancouver, TJ Brody's already a whipping boy here. It's crazy. 5 days in.
I got asked today, how concerned am I about Elias Pettersson's start?
Right. Oh, come on.
Yeah, I'm like, I haven't even really thought of it, actually.
Yeah.
He had two games that didn't quite go very well, and now he gets JT Miller back today, and I'm less than concerned about that. But it's going to be the same everywhere. Has the Jack Campbell, is the starting goaltender stuff started to overload yet?
Oh, it's around.
It's out there.
It's
it was
hovering.
Sniffing around until the announcement came. The one story, Ray, that I will say, if you're an Oilers fan, I don't think you're like over there, like you're panicking overly, but you kind of wouldn't you be thinking like, are these discussions really being had already at this point? Like, can't play defense, no attention to detail. We have goaltending problems. Like, we have two of the best players in the world, and we're a disaster when they're not on the ice. I think if you're a fan of the Oilers, you didn't really think this quickly you'd be having those kind of talks.
No, and I think you'd probably be at the point of, like, again?
Yeah.
Like, are we doing this again, the same conversation again? I found it really interesting that the two young guys are coming out of their lineup on the blue line. Ethan Bear, who had a really good rookie year, and Caleb Jones, they're coming out tonight, and Chris Russell's going in, and William Lagesson, who's a rookie, played a few games last year, but he's more of a defensive player. It's like, you know, Dave Tippett is just like, we got to lock this down, man. We got one goalie.
Yeah.
And he's getting 40 shots a night. Whether he's good, bad, or otherwise, this can't be. And so, you know, Edmonton's got their deal. I heard you guys talking about the Calgary-Vancouver thing. Not only in Vancouver are they, you know, a little bit up in arms that Markstrom went to, you know, is gone, and they got to, you know, and he gets a shutout, but they got to play him 10 times this year.
Right.
Yeah.
There's only 56 games, and you're going to see Markstrom 9 of them.
Yeah.
Assuming he gets one off. And, you know, Noodles, you brought up Tanev. He was eating pucks like crazy blocks the other night.
I know. Like that, he flies under the radar. Like when he's healthy, yeah. He's a very solid defender. And that's what they were looking for, right? Is obviously a replacement for Brody. He slides in there. He can play hard minutes. And kind of, to me, when he's at his best, you don't notice him that much. But then you're looking at the score sheet going, that guy was blocking shots left and right. The puck couldn't get to Markstrom because he was all over it. And it was impressive. Like, you know, that's something they targeted. And you know, again, it's one game.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, that's the beauty of it, and that comes back to what you were saying, Brian. Like, we're 5 days in, and it is overreaction Friday, overreaction Thursday, Monday, you name it, because team great, team stinks, you know, and it doesn't matter.
The whole country's watching. Everyone's got
exactly.
2 cents on it, and
yeah.
there's not as many games, you
yeah.
know, so they quite literally are more important, you know, like it is still too early to make any sort of assessment on anything. But it's not like U.S. Thanksgiving. You know, it's not like, I'll give you 20 games. You got about 10. So you got
but
like
here's
six
the thing,
or seven
Brian,
more.
Too. What do you think of this? Is like, not only is there, you know, urgency of the 56 games, but everything feels so urgent because each day is more lineup gymnastics everywhere. So it feels like, oh, teams have to make these changes everywhere. And well, the Leafs made four today, and the Jets have to make three. And man, guys are going, you know, they've got people coming off the taxi squad, and one guy's going, like Romanoff got sent to the taxi squad in Montreal for a day to save some cash. And like it makes everything feel like it's frantic and out of control.
Ray, from what you saw of the Leafs, you were in the house in Ottawa, which was their worst performance. But yeah. What do you think is going to be the thing on the fence where it's like, it may be similar to Edmonton? Jamie was talking about they kind of defend almost similar. But what is going to be, you know, the one factor where if they do this regularly, they're going to be an elite team, not just in the North, but the whole league. And if they don't, they're going to piss the season away.
For me, it's just, you know, how quickly can they defend and get out of their zone? Once they're over the blue line, I never even think about them because, of course, they got that top end, which is so good.
They make things happen, man.
Man, right. They just make everybody scared to play. Like, who wants to be, I'm going to be really aggressive against Matthews. I'm going to try and not get burned. And then as soon as I give him more space, he crushes me, right? You're stuck trying to figure out a way to play against him. But I think it's, how quick can they defend and get out of their zone? And that's not, you know, Noodles, you would know from, you know, your Calgary days and stuff, but that's not necessarily Brody's great strength, and he's in their top four. You know, Hall and Muzzin are a solid pair, and then it's a question mark. So you've got, in my mind, you've got a defenseman in Brody that's not a quick stopper, and then you've got two guys at the bottom that, whoever they are, whichever configuration they use, I don't know exactly what they are yet. So that's my concern when I watch them.
Well, my whole thing, and all I was saying is when I look at Edmonton, their habits have carried over from last year. And then I was looking at Toronto, and I'm like, yep, same type of thing. And I know habits take time to break. And it's the personnel has changed a little bit, but not from the core of both of these teams. And when I look at Toronto, if I'm pre-scouting them, where do you get to the Leafs? It's pressure on their D, because sometimes the support is there, sometimes the support is not. So, you know, if I can get on that defensive core and force them to turn pucks over and force the Leafs to play in their own zone and defend, that's where, you know, that's how Montreal, I know the Leafs won that game, but I thought Montreal was the better team 5-on-5. The Leafs special teams won, obviously, and their top-end talent took over when needed to do. And also, Freddie made two big saves in overtime against Montreal. But 5-on-5, when you have to defend and you have to play with some structure, that's something that's still a work in progress for the Maple Leafs when I watch them. Ottawa, they played intense on Friday night. They played excited, and they didn't look afraid to make mistakes. And I thought that's how they got to Toronto. Saturday night, the Leafs, the details were very strong for the Leafs, and Ottawa looked scared to lose that game, and that's exactly what happened. The Leafs just dominated the Saturday night. But my whole thing in looking at that defensive core for the Maple Leafs, you know, Brody's a guy who can skate. But if you're physical on him, like we saw with the Montreal Canadiens, he'll turn pucks over. And
his partner's not going to help him much in that area either.
Well, that's Riley's, the thing. You know,
Riley's not exactly a safety blanket when it comes to toughness or whatever.
I still believe, and that's what it comes back to your original comment, Brian, is like, this is all a work in progress. I'd like to see what teams look like 10 to 15 games in where, you know, systems are habitual. You're not thinking about it out there. You just react. You just read and react off of it. But there's not a long runway to get this going. That's the biggest challenge.
Okay, but so if they can't figure out how to defend and get moving quicker, then all that offensive talent never gets the puck.
Right.
And so it doesn't, you know, you carve the efficiency of that, of the top six forwards, if you will. So the whole trick for me is, how do they defend? How quick do they get it into the guys who are really dangerous? How quick do they get it in their hands? And if they can do that, I think they're fine. But in the meantime, they're going to have to knock some players around and move some players up and down. And you know, maybe Lettinen gives them something that they're more comfortable with. And, you know, when he, at 26 years old, he's able to jump in and play. Well, that would be a hell of a boost. Like, what if he turns out to be a legit 4-5 guy for them? That changes everything for them.
Ray, you mentioned Freddie earlier. Like, do you think the one thing about him, and I know he's a big guy, he's regarded as one of the top goaltenders, is you've been in between the benches for a lot of games. It's just the timing of a big save. It's just like that Josh Anderson kind of backhand half breakaway goal. I didn't think that was a good goal, but it was just the timing of it. I don't know what you think, but just for him to get to that elite level, if you're up 4-0 and there's a minute left, much like Carey Price was the other day, and you give up one, people don't care. But when your team just gets you back or they get the lead and you give up that softie, it's just crushing.
Well, first of all, I don't know what the stats are. I don't have them at the top of my head here. But since he's come to Toronto, his first month, which is usually October, is terrible every year. It's never any good. And so now here he is in January, and he's off to a bit of a rocky start.
Yeah, I find that weird, though, Ray, to be honest with you. How is this the same thing every year? It's like, I don't know.
Whatever you're doing, change it.
Right.
Because it's not getting you out of the gate very good. But the big save thing, man, like, Grant Fuhr used to have that. He'd give up 4 goals, and they needed a big save, and he'd make this unbelievable save at the big moment, and they'd go on and win. And Freddie's just not had that. He doesn't have that reputation. And so it can always change, but I don't see where the Leafs are a better team without him in net. I think he's good.
I agree.
I guess I hear you. I'd like him to make a bigger save at an important time more often. I think that would change his narrative a lot.
Yeah, especially, you know, come playoff time, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And there's no, as I said earlier, there's no controversy in net unless Freddie makes it one. You know, it doesn't matter what Jack Campbell does. Freddie plays well. He's your guy. You have more faith in him. You should have more faith in him. But we got that going tonight. There's been a lot of action throughout the league already, but probably the craziest storyline of the weekend happened in a Zoom chat in Philly where Jake Voracek goes at a guy. This was wild. Let's play it because not everyone has heard it. Not everyone's seen it. This was from over the weekend. Jake Voracek, he's up there with Travis Konecny, and Konecny's just like, all right, throw it at me. I'm feeling
good.
He was
the star of the show.
Star of the show.
He had a hat trick, yeah.
Philly, what do they take? 2 in a row off pit. They're feeling good. Yeah. And some columnist in Philly posing a question to Voracek, and this is how the back and forth went.
2 games in, Jake, how different does the season feel, if at all, given the circumstances of the offseason and the condensed schedule and everything?
Doesn't matter what I say, Mike. You're going to write every time. No, so it doesn't matter what you say. Yeah, it feels different. I mean, we got 4 points out of the first 2 games. I wasn't even going to answer your question because you are such a weasel. It's not even funny. Next question.
I like how he just went in and out of consciousness. He's like, you're such a weasel. Then he tried to answer it. And then at the end, he just said, you're such a weasel.
Yeah, Ray, what do you make of that? Yeah. You've gone back and forth, I'm sure, at times. I don't know if it's been that, you know, heated necessarily.
Not, I mean, not public because you've always had access. And, you know, there's been guys that have, a couple in particular, that have come at me. They don't like the way that I've evaluated their game. And they've come at me and we've had a little, hey, how you doing? Whatever, it's the way it goes. That was spectacular. In he just couldn't, like, Jake Voracek just couldn't, he couldn't walk past it. He's like, to hell with it. Like, he tried to go back there. And I don't know if you read some of the articles. I mean, this guy's been all over Voracek for quite some time. And
then I think he has the right to do it. If it's like, if this guy can write whatever he wants about me, I'm allowed to tell him off in any form that I want.
But he did I want to give context too. Apparently, because I called Frank Saravelli the next day, because Frank, you know, that's his market. That I'm like, tell me the backstory here and stuff. But apparently, Voracek put out on Twitter too, saying, I would have had this conversation with him a long time ago, because apparently this guy's been writing gutless tweets about him and stuff and writing articles for like a year and a half. But because of the pandemic, because of non-face-to-face, that's the first time this guy's had an opportunity, like Voracek, to even talk to him. So it's been like an 18-month process here, and this guy shows up on a Zoom, and Voracek can't control himself. So that was the context behind the scenes of, and he put it out there on Twitter. Apparently, Voracek said this is why.
Well,
and
this guy Mike, I don't have his name in front of me, but he responded to continue to add to the, again, I don't know the history. I'd never heard of the guy before, but some of his tweets were blatantly sarcastic. Like, I did see some of the people were finding them. They're like, well, what about this? He's like, I know it's a joke. Obviously, they shouldn't put him on waivers. You know, like,
right. So
to be, not to defend the guy, because I don't know what he's been doing. And I have no problem with Voracek not liking the guy. That's human nature. You know, that's what it was. It was a human moment where he's like, I can't listen to this guy. I don't like you. But there's probably more to it than just he hates Voracek, you know, and Voracek can't handle it. But that's kind of stuff that's going to happen now, because you never get face to face.
Yeah, well, I mean, go ahead, Ray.
Go ahead,
I was just going to say, as a player, did you ever confront a media member, Ray?
One time, and without going too deep into it, I was on TV at the time. It was late in my career, and I made an opinion on something that was a kind of a big deal around a happening, and never heard from the reporter. But he didn't like my comments. So like a year and a half later, I'm playing in Atlanta, and he wrote something to the effect that I was trying to use my ESPN connections to get into the All-Star game, which was total bullshit.
Yeah, really.
Chat. So I got his number and I called him at home, and you know, the first 3 minutes of the conversation didn't go very well for either of us, and then we kind of talked it out, and he explained why he was mad, and I explained why I said what I did on TV and why this all wasn't right, and we kind of like, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, that's, and it was fine. But I think that what bugs players, and you guys tell me if you disagree, please, but is we always get written about us. We have to be accountable for the way we play. We have to be accountable for our body language and they're breaking a stick. And somebody can write or say whatever they want. And when they get, when all of us in the media get chipped back on, it doesn't go so well. Like if we want the players to be accountable, well, if we make a mistake, if we, not an opinion, opinion's opinion, but if I say, you know, look, Freddie Anderson's made, or, you know, has given up 8 goals 3 games in a row, well, I deserve to have somebody go, hey, dummy, he's only played 2 games and he gave up 4 and 3 or whatever the numbers are. Like that, there's nothing wrong with that. But I find the media takes things, and I guess I'm part of that, really sensitively. And the players are supposed to just accept it. And so I wasn't surprised at all that, to, whether it's Voracek or not, I don't know him, but I wasn't surprised at all that this blew up.
No, me neither. And I think what is evident in everything you just said is that we're dealing with human beings on both sides. You know, anyone,
yep.
People can act as if they've got the thickest skin. It's just not possible to get there completely. You know, we can
nobody
all
nobody likes
to,
hearing it or reading it.
No,
hazy,
it's,
no matter
it's
who
tough.
You are.
You can accept it easier. You can accept it better. You know, it doesn't need to drag you down for minutes, hours, days, or whatever, like maybe it once did. But it's not easy to be criticized, to feel like you're the brunt of the joke, or that, you know, whatever it is, and that goes both ways. I mean, that's totally understandable.
Both sides. Like, I mean, I'm sitting here, I did get a heads up, so I got my TV on here, and I'm watching you knuckleheads, and, like, you know, O has the courage to wear that whatever he's wearing over his shoulder.
The poncho.
Like, the poncho. Like,
buddy,
I'm not even sure.
I had no choice. It's my wife's. It's my wife's.
Oh, I'm sure it looks much better on her. I know it does.
It actually does look nice.
it, it, It really looks good on you. I'm saying. By the way, you guys brought up El Guapo earlier.
Yeah.
One of the great. I don't need no stinking sweater. I don't need no sweater.
It's so good. Oh, it's such a good movie. I have to watch it again probably tonight at some point.
Oh, you got to pick up a little El Guapo. You have to.
Yeah. Just a little bit.
You should see the nonsense. Like I had one of my good friends offer me his luchador mask, and I'm just like, it's like, I'm a professional broadcaster. I don't know if I need the luchador mask.
That would be awesome.
It would be playing the part. I want to see the wardrobe change day in, day out. Like, what are you putting together tomorrow? Is it a garbage bag? You know, do you stick with the shawls? Like, where do you take this? Because you've got real opportunity here. You got a runway. Yeah. And I think you need to own it. And
dude, where am I going to go from here, you idiot?
Well, you're not going to wear that every day, are you?
I think
Why not? I don't know. I'm just not going to create a theme where it's like tomorrow I'm going to be some kind of circus event. And it's like you can get your jollies like you did today. Oh. This guy, Ray, couldn't stop laughing for 10 minutes. he wanted me to have a piece of toast and some corn on the cob.
Somebody just texted me and said, you look like the bird lady in Home Alone.
We can get pigeons to your house for the show tomorrow. That's your theme tomorrow. You're the pigeon lady in Home Alone 2.
Yeah, the bird lady.
And that's, I think, perfect. I think it's perfect. And you throw your seeds right before the end of the show. You say, Kevin, run. And curtains.
Kevin, run.
I think it's not happening. Okay.
That is so funny. We'll
work on it. We've got a lot of options here. Anyway, Ray, we'll leave it there. We'll see what happens tonight, and we'll break it down tomorrow at 5:05.
Yeah, awesome, guys. Have a good day.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. You can check out the website, mapletoyota.com, and the showroom remains open by appointment only, or you can buy and shop online at mapletoyota.com and receive rates from 0%. Marcellus Wiley coming up on the games over the weekend. Look ahead to the games coming up. The coaching carousel in the NFL is a lot to get into with Marcellus. He will join us, Sam Mitchell, into the 6 p.m. hour. Are we doing Al's Brothers power rankings? You tweeted that out earlier.
Ooh. You know it. Al's Brothers North Division power rankings once a week. We're going to see where he thinks the teams stand, and we will debate.
All right, we'll get to that in about an hour. So there you go. It's going to be a fun show. We continue to move on. Three hombres. Just making things happen here on the radio and on TV. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 in on TSN 4. All right, Sam Mitchell will join us in about a half an hour. Raptors in action tonight, taking on Dallas down in Tampa. Raps have won two in a row. They held on for dear life again on Saturday night, but they got the job done. And we'll get to our Pinty's performers of the weekend a little bit later in the hour on the TV side of things. I went with Chris Boucher, you know, because he is confident, he is performing, he's putting up minutes, and he looks really good. And the question is it sustainable? You know, is it just a flash in the pan, 12 games into a new year, he's getting the opportunity, or do you think this could continue for him? And if you're the Raptors, you got to certainly hope that that is the case. So we'll catch up with Sam, get his take on that. James Harden went off on Saturday. You know, Durant looked good, and I think they got Milwaukee tonight, though. That's going to be a different look, a different challenge. And we'll get into that more with Sam and Marcellus Wiley here in just a moment. It is Martin Luther King Day down in the States. And the timing of this is never going to really work with any day of the year. But, you know, the coaching carousel in the NFL, here we go again. The same topic year after year after year. Why do we not see black coaches being hired, African-Americans being hired? And I think there's only two jobs left. And Eric Bieniemy, who's been the OC in Kansas City for a long time, is – resume speaks for itself. He's been working with Andy Reid for a long time. Andy Reid disciples generally move on and do pretty well.
Wasn't that the thing in Houston, Hayes? They finally got to him and said, we want to interview you, and it might be too little too late as far as Houston's concerned?
Yeah, I think potentially it could be. And then I believe the other one is Philly. You know, Philly's still looking, but there's only a couple of jobs left. And it's not only Bieniemy. You know, there's other African-American OCs and defensive coordinators and coaches throughout the league. And It's kind of happening again, and I don't know how the NFL is going to approach it. I'm not sure Goodell's going to really speak on it, other than maybe being posed the question at the Super Bowl, and he'll dance around it. But
this guy on the line will ask him.
Yep. Okay. Let's bring him in. Here he is, longtime NFL or NFL analyst from FS1, Marcellus Wiley. Marcellus, obviously it's Martin Luther King Day, and we'd be talking about that anyway, but coincides with a topic that the NFL probably doesn't feel easy about, you know, the fact that the coaching jobs are being filled up and we're not seeing any African Americans getting the jobs. Do you have a theory on this, and what do you make of the story?
Oh, man. Hello, brothers. Well, this is an interesting one, man, because you can attack it from so many different angles. Whether it's the volume of applicants, we know that there are a lot of qualified candidates that are African America, but in comparison, the numbers are dwarfed by how many people are qualified that are not African American. So you're not even starting from a level playing field. Now, why is that the case? I go back to my playing days and when I was an active player, and you're on the downside of your career, you're coming down the hill, whatever that may be. A lot of us talk about what was next. And it was interesting, if you really wanted to do a sociological case experiment, a lot of the players that weren't African-American were talking more front office, more on the sidelines. And a lot of the African-American players were either saying, hey, I'm thinking about broadcasting, or I'm just going to live off the fat of the land, as they say, just be retired, golf, I got enough money, I take care of my family, et cetera. And I remember this is like 2005, and I kept saying to myself, it's an interesting line of demarcation between race and ethnicity and career ambitions going forward. But I didn't think too much about it until now you're in a position where the Rooney Rule has not worked as advertised. And then it takes me back to that place where that commitment to becoming a coach. I'll give you an example. Sean McVay. And everyone knows Sean McVay is a tremendous coach, but he also benefited from relationships, whether it was the nepotism of his family line or just the relationships he built in his own network. The point is, beyond all of that, he made a commitment and he had a conviction early on to become who he's become. And there are other African-American coaches who have done the same. Let's go back to a Mike Tomlin. And if you notice one thing about Sean McVay and Mike Tomlin, not tremendous NFL players with an opportunity, correct? So when they get that opportunity to commit, they do it, and they do it wholeheartedly. What we're witnessing really to me, if I had to theorize, is how the gap is closing, but there was such a wide disparity between the number of applicants going back a decade or so between African-Americans and non-African-Americans. As that gap closes, you'll hear more people. Whether it will be a Leslie Frazier who is older than Eric Bieniemy or other names that we're kind of spinning around. But what is going to be the resolve? The answer is really trying to create that level playing field in applicants, and then the opportunities will kind of go more evenly spread to all parties involved. So It's funny if you were on the other side, a non-African-American, and you looked at broadcasting, you would kind of look at it saying, man, it's a lot of black broadcasters and former players. And I think that's not by coincidence. I'm a case study as well. I'm an example of that. But I don't think that there is a simple solution. But my 30,000 feet solution, or at least theory of it, is just simply – there, back in the days, there were more guys committed to one thing than others.
With Marcellus Wiley, the four games over the weekend, they weren't necessarily epic. You know, these weren't great ball games. On Saturday night, it was ugly, but a lot of that was based on the wind. A lot of that was based on the weather up in Buffalo. And you played there for a long time. You're a Southern California guy, and you know what it's like to play in Buffalo. And we talked about this in the last hour. I take it personally as a Torontonian, as a Canadian, when I hear people from the southern United States complain about the weather affecting the style of game. I love it. I love that the elements play a factor. How do you feel about, you know, the weather factoring in as significantly as it did on Saturday night?
I'm torn because I hated it as a player, not just because of the fact that it affected the product in terms of what fans were able to witness. But deeper than that, it just affected my performance, it felt like. I mean, when you feel good, you play good. It's just that simple. And you're going out there in elements that don't feel good. And so you're introducing not only a 12th man, which this year has obviously been minimized because there's no fans, but a 13th man, which are the elements. So you have this team that goes out there and they're prepared to go to battle. They're prepared mentally, physically, but they just don't know how to adjust to the fact that there's no traction, or they just don't know how to adjust to there's 50 miles per hour and wind conditions and the wind chill. And now you're not seeing exactly team versus team. You're seeing team adjust to adversity of elements versus team adjusting to elements in that respect. Here's my example. I was on a team at Columbia my senior year. We were a smaller athletic team. We were playing against a team that was bigger and stronger. And it was Dartmouth versus Columbia. We had lost one game. I think they were undefeated, but we were evenly matched. We had to play in a monsoon, and I don't know what the temperature was, but I know the rain pour was just tremendous. We didn't score a point because we played on turf, and it was nice weather most of the time. We get out there, we didn't know how to even respond or react or even to play in that weather. So all of our efforts were for naught because we were just trying to deal with the rain and the fact that we had seen our leg disappear in a puddle versus a team that was used to it. I understand what fans are like. That's not necessarily a level playing field or the integrity of the sport, but I also understand when you say it, as I say it, like, look, tough luck, sucker. You got to learn to adjust. I'm going to adjust on the
right.
Clock.
Exactly. It's football in January. Gear up. Be ready.
Marcellus, when you're watching Aaron Rodgers out there, I'm fascinated looking at this guy. It looks like he's done what few athletes can do, and it's like master the position. You know what it takes to get jacked up for a football game, and this guy looks like he's walking in to get a coffee somewhere, and he's so casual and so dominant, it honestly looked like he has mastered his craft as an NFL starting quarterback. He's just so calm, and he's so awesome at the same time.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It looks like he's playing 7-on-7. We call it April football, not August football when it's training camp. The big boys, the fatties are out there hitting you. It's April football when you go out there flip-flops, you got on your T-shirts, and all the girls think you're cute. Like, it's just on air. He looks like that in January. Like,
I know,
what
it's
is
crazy.
Going on? And it's amazing because if you know Aaron Rodgers, you know his psyche. The worst thing that they did, or if you're a Green Bay fan, the best thing they did is said, we don't believe in you. And look, Aaron Rodgers from Hello, they said they didn't believe in him. That's why he dropped in the draft from number one to pick number 24. And when that happened, he put a chip on his shoulder. And with all his tremendous success, I'm sure he still had the chip on his shoulder, but it started to get a little smaller because he was Aaron Rodgers. But then they draft in his position, give up resources, pick a quarterback named Jordan Love, who by all reports is not ready to play NFL football just yet. And Aaron Rodgers looked around and said, oh, they really don't believe in me. Well, I believe so much in myself. Let me just show that. And once you become disconnected from those who have those controls over you or your beliefs matter, once you just disconnect from their beliefs, you're just Aaron Rodgers in bliss. And we're just all witnessing him paint poetically every weekend of him just saying, hey, I got the brush, I'm the artiste, and I don't need you guys and your opinions. And this is all the result of them kind of having that position over time.
Marcellus, we saw Tom Brady versus Drew Brees, and you know it didn't go very well for Brees in the end with the picks and just didn't look great. We were talking about it last hour. You know, it's tough not to just watch his last game and then judge. You have to look at the whole career and what he's been able to accomplish. First and foremost, do you think he's done? And secondly, you know, look back and tell us how great he was and not even where he would compare to Brady, but is he a top 10 quarterback or top 20 quarterback all time?
Oh, certainly a top 20, certainly a top 10. Yeah, tremendous player. I played with Drew Brees from day one. Hello. Like, he was drafted to my team, San Diego Chargers. Him and LaDainian Tomlinson, same draft. What an amazing draft. What an amazing opportunity and memory I have of seeing him grow from hello the first day of practice and people questioning his arm strength, knowing that he was deadly accurate, but questioning if he could make it in the NFL with that arm strength. That's why he was a second rounder, not a first rounder. And then watching him become the all-time great Drew Brees. With that said, it's unfortunate what's happened to him of late, the injuries last year, this year. More importantly, the lowlights that we've seen in the postseason the last 2 years. Go back to last year against the Minnesota Vikings. People were saying that the third best quarterback on the field was Drew Brees. It was Kirk Cousins. It was Taysom Hill who was giving them a spark, but he was the backup, and then Drew Brees. And you fast forward to this year. You have to say that again almost. You say it was Tom Brady protecting the football and taking advantage of opportunities and turnovers. It was Jameis Winston just coming in for a gadget play. And then there's Drew Brees with his three turnovers. So with a tremendous resume like he has, why would you continue to put lowlights, low moments on that same resume? And I give everyone perspective and context. He had to go to war, tug of war, with ownership just to get the Kobe contract he got, the 2 years, $50 million. And that's Drew Brees with that resume, an all-time great, who has tons of equity in the New Orleans area. They still had to kind of go at it in that last contract negotiation. All things considered, I don't tell anyone their career is over until they say it. But I look forward to Drew Brees living up to his word and saying, hey, I am retiring this year and I'm going to move on to greener pastures. As a broadcaster or whatever he wants to do, he's going to be tremendous at it.
Yep, and that's what it sounds like he's going to do. I believe he's taken over at NBC or is going to be a big part of their program moving forward. Great stuff as always. Two more games next weekend. It's going to be wild. We'll break it down next Monday. Thank you for doing this as always.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Some great football. Look forward to talking next week, brother.
You got it. There he is, Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer, former Buffalo Bill, former Charger, teammate of Drew Brees. And, yeah, Brees, he's already got that deal done. I believe it's with NBC, which is pretty remarkable.
I find that crazy, man.
That's
almost
wild.
As crazy as a guy that played for so long. And they, like, my roommate went from a roommate to an assistant coach. So he didn't have to show up an hour before practice. It's 2 hours before practice. It's 3 hours after. I'm like, when you're done playing, I don't know how you commit right away to that time. Like, the time consumption is crazy.
Yeah, just immediately right into it. Yeah.
I did it. It was hard. It's hard because I had a tough time retiring and then being with the same team on the other side because you look behind, you get to see behind the curtain, which the business side of hockey is awful. It's awful. Because the owner's got an opinion, not even the media and the fans. It's just, you know, it's such a cutthroat business. As a player, you're oblivious. You just show up and play. You lose the game that night, you go out for dinner, you have a beer, you go home, you talk to your family on the phone, you hang out. The rest of the people at the rink and owners and all that, they pick up the pieces of that night, and they live it in their mind.
They got to break it all down and
it's
gear
the worst.
Up the next one.
I hated it.
It's tough.
I hated it.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Brees is going into broadcasting, so it's not going to be to the same extent.
No.
And it's probably a massive check, and he's like, yeah, this is something I'll do the next 20 years and then shut it down.
Exactly.
Sam Mitchell coming up in about 20 minutes. Raptors in action tonight. Al's brother with his power rankings of the All-Canadian Division.
I'm so happy you're letting it happen.
I want to hear it. We'll dissect it. I mean,
I love it.
We got to break it down. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Sam Mitchell in about 10 minutes. Raptors, Dallas tonight. Leafs, Jets tonight. You can hear that right here on TSN Radio. And it's fight week, too. You see Conor McGregor roll into Yaz Island on a yacht.
Yeah.
And he's got Dustin Poirier on Saturday night. And it sounds like Khabib is lurking. Like, Khabib's kind of just in the background, just wondering if he might fight. Not a shock. Not the first fighter won't be the last to issue a retirement right after a fight.
I was
like
just
3 weeks
about
later.
To say, McGregor, I've had enough of McGregor. Like, and then I just said to myself, who am I kidding? I'll tune in to watch McGregor.
Absolutely.
Like, he
I'm
sucks
watching.
You in every time.
Yep. Oh, he's the epitome of a promoter.
No
That's
kidding.
Why when he fought Mayweather, it was just like Mayweather promotes as well, if not better, than anyone I've seen in a long time. And McGregor promotes.
So you mean personally or their team?
Well, both of them. Like the way they hype it up, the way they talk smack, the way they go about a press conference, you know, whatever it is.
That McGregor-Mayweather fight might have been the best promoted fight of all time.
Yeah.
Well, with pay-per-view buys and all that kind of stuff, it was
for sure
astronomical. And this will be a big one on Saturday night. Whenever McGregor fights, it's first time in a year he's going to be doing it. And with the Khabib stuff hanging over, which I don't think was a coincidence, it's like, okay, McGregor fights and fights well and wins. I wouldn't be shocked if within a couple of weeks you hear McGregor, Khabib 2.0, the second they could fill up a building in Vegas, it's going to happen.
Worries me, because what if he loses?
Well,
like the guy he's fighting is no slouch. Like, that's the thing.
No, he's
like,
not. Poirier can go.
You know, McGregor, it's not like McGregor's just been – I think he's a very distracted guy. He's got so many things on the go. Now, he's a great fighter, don't get me wrong, but if he loses, then he's going to have to battle. Like, you're not going to fight Khabib if you lose. You got to get –
No, exactly. Khabib's got no interest anyway.
Up.
Yeah,
yep.
You're going to be fighting Manny Pacquiao or something in a boxing exhibition. You know, that's probably what's coming next anyway. Sam Mitchell coming up in the final hour, and Leafs Jets tonight. We'll continue to tee that up. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-aided.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA license 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.